This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Iggy Pop.
WBAI New York, it's 10 a.m. Coming up next, Bike Snob with Evan Weiss.
Hello, you're listening to Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm your host, Evan Weiss. There's a common misconception among people who don't ride bikes that people who do ride bikes don't get tickets. Well, as I like to say, bike ticketing is like rats having sex. Sure, you may not notice it, but believe me, it's happening all the time. Of course, if you do ride a bike here in New York City, you know that bike ticketing is a fact of life. Actual numbers are hard to come by, but any reports I've seen suggest ticketing is increasing steadily along with ridership. And the DOT and the NYPD are constantly reassuring us that police are enforcing those bike laws. Also, ticketing is much more visible while you're out riding in New York City than it was 5, 10, 20 years ago. There are places in Manhattan that are basically perpetual ticket traps now. Then there's the NYPD's unofficial policy of ticketing cyclists after someone on a bike is hit by a driver, which is a whole other issue we'll hopefully get to later on. Anyway, if you've gotten a ticket on your bike here in New York, you may have been surprised to learn that whatever it is you were doing at the time was illegal. In fact, it may turn out that what you were doing wasn't even illegal at all. See, when it comes to bikes, there's lots of misunderstandings about what's legal and what's not, on the part of the riders and on the part of the NYPD. So to help clear up some of these misunderstandings, my guest today is Steve Vaccaro. Steve is a bicycle lawyer and activist here in New York City, and he's with the law firm of Vaccaro and White. If you follow bike and pedestrian issues in this city closely, you probably know who he is. Thanks very much for coming in, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Okay, we're going to take calls. The studio line is 212-209-2877. So please call in any questions about the law. But before we do, my inspiration, the reason I wanted to have Steve on was something that popped up on my Twitter last week, which was a question. Someone tweeted at you, Steve, and here was the question. The question was this: I'm hearing about tickets for no reflectors in Ridgewood, Maspeth. Is that a legit ticket? So let's just start with that. Is it a legitimate ticket? You don't have any reflectors on your bike. Can the NYPD stop you and ticket you for that?
They absolutely can. And they can also stop you and ticket you for the color of clothes you're wearing, the color of eyes you have, or anything else. But if you want to know what ticket they should be issuing, it's not for the failure to have reflectors on your bike. The fact is that bicycle equipment is governed by the state vehicle and traffic law. If you read it superficially, you will see that there is a requirement that there be reflectors on every new bike that's sold, which is not a requirement that should be enforced against people on bikes that have already been sold who are out riding on the street. And then there's also a reference to the commissioner of the Department of Motor Vehicles having the ability to promulgate further requirements for reflector use by cyclists. No requirements have been promulgated by the commissioner, so there are no further requirements than new bikes being sold must have reflectors.
Okay, so not to get too bogged down in the issue of reflectors specifically, but obviously somebody out there is getting ticketed for not having reflectors. Other people are out there getting ticketed for other things that are not illegal, such as you're always hearing about adults getting ticketed for not having helmets on, for example. What do you do in that situation? What recourse do you have?
Well, your recourse is to challenge the ticket, and you have to bear in mind that police officers are required to enforce a lot of different laws, and they have not necessarily memorized the details of all of those laws. It would be a difficult task to do so, but it is something that we expect of them before they start issuing tickets. And unfortunately, when it comes to the traffic laws and how those laws apply to cyclists, it seems that very few of the police officers are aware of what the law is. And so we end up with these problems and people needing to challenge the summonses that they're issued. And it's only further problematized by the tendency of many officers to charge what would be a routine traffic violation or equipment violation for a motorist in traffic court through the DMV. They charge it against the cyclist as a criminal violation, which means a separate set of procedures, typically means you can't pay online or you have to take a trip to court. So these are some of the problems cyclists often face when they get a ticket.
Okay. Just want to remind you, we're taking calls today. Any questions you have about cycling and the law, the number is 212-209-2877. But we're not only talking about the law here and the minutiae of the law. We're also talking about the act of cycling. Now, there's a way to ride considerately and safely. Okay, so in a way that's safe for you, in a way that's safe for others, for pedestrians, a way that's considerate. That's often doesn't really have anything to do with the law. In other words, sometimes we're being ticketed as cyclists for things that are quote unquote illegal, but they're not dangerous to anybody. You know, for example, a common ticket you might receive on a bicycle might be running a red light slowly at a T intersection when there's nobody there. So there's that sort of ticketing. At the same time, it's possible to ride in total adherence to the law, to do everything quote unquote right, but to be an inconsiderate cyclist, to yell at pedestrians when they step out into the bike lane or that sort of thing. What purpose is, why do we have these laws? How do we approach this? How do we reconcile this as cyclists, in your opinion?
Well, we have the laws. The laws in many cases embody good pointers or suggestions for how to proceed safely and considerately, but not in all cases. And then we have the enforcement of the law. And I think you need to understand that when police are issuing summonses, their primary goal is not keeping the streets safe. I think there are very few officers who would claim that that is what they're doing when they're out ticketing. Rather, they're trying to issue tickets as efficiently as possible for the specific violations that they were told to focus on that day's ticket writing detail. And if your goal is to efficiently write the tickets, you will go to a location where cyclists are committing traffic violations that are completely safe. And so everyone's doing it because it's safe and they got to get to work or to school or wherever they're going. And so you find that 60% or more of the cyclists going through a T intersection, meaning there's no intersecting street that's crossing right through, and the cyclists are on the far side of the intersection. You know, when there's no pedestrian there, the cyclists will disobey that red light. And that's a great opportunity for police officers who were told, go out and issue 20 tickets to cyclists today, to be able to issue those tickets. And some police take it one step further because they know they can follow a cyclist for 2, 3, even 4 intersections in a row in that exact scenario along the border of a park, and issue those red light tickets, which have a recidivism provision where each additional red light ticket you get in a rolling 18-month period increases in cost up to $900 and change. So if you get hit for 4 in a row along 4 intersections next to the Brooklyn Navy Yard or St. Nicholas Avenue or many different places around the city, you're being hit with over $2,000 worth of tickets.
All right. So this is a ridiculous situation. And what, so we have, what recourse do you have if you're hit with $900 worth of tickets? Is the judge going to, you're going to have to go to court, first of all, unless you want to plead guilty and pay $900 in fines, correct?
Right. So a traffic ticket is returnable, meaning you have to go to the DMV court. It's not regular court, it's DMV court. You can pay online, or you can go to the DMV court and challenge it. I do not make my living representing people with respect to traffic tickets, but it comes up because sometimes you get hit by a car and you're in the hospital, and then the police come by and give you your ticket because they're blaming you for getting hit. And then that comes up in the course of the type of case that I actually focus on. I have seen in a number of cases judges agree to drop the multiple ticket thing down to just one ticket.
Yeah.
Because they recognize that if a course of conduct over 3 minutes is not exactly the recidivism that this escalating fee structure was intended to punish. Mm-hmm. That really the cyclist didn't realize they went through a red light at a T intersection, realize it was wrong, and then they got punished and they did it again and again and again. It's
right,
really
right.
just a few minutes. So, but there are some police officers that will uphold it, and I'm sorry, some traffic court judges, these are administrative law judges, who will uphold all of the tickets, and you really can get slammed with thousands of dollars worth for a few minutes conduct.
Right. Okay. I want to remind you, we're taking your calls today. The studio line is 212-209-2877. Now, you've said you've been in situations where people you've represented who are victims in crashes have been ticketed in a hospital bed?
Yes.
Okay. And so that's happening. And then you're saying that, you know, people are being ticketed for running nine lights in a row. And then they have to go to court and they have to try to argue that down. Now, you go to court. All right, let's start with there was a situation at the end of last week on the West Side Highway. You might have heard about this out there if you're listening, that a this was all on video. A motorist, an FDNY firefighter as it happened, was in a muscle car, and a cyclist confronted him for driving recklessly. And the driver proceeded to drive into the cyclist with his car. And this was on video. This was captured on video by a reporter for Barstool Sports named Liz Gonzalez. Okay, so this video went viral. Everybody was talking about it. Liz Gonzalez said with regard to the video, quote, this is from the Gothamist article about the incident, "I don't often side with bikers, as they usually do whatever the F they please. But this particular biker was not at fault in any way. And watching the whole thing play out was wild." Okay. The police didn't do anything with this driver. They let him go. Now, is Liz Gonzalez's attitude that the bikers do whatever the F they want, Is this an opinion that's shared among police, among judges, and is this something that's creating a problem for us out on the street, that's making it harder for us to get out of our tickets, that's making it harder for us to get justice when somebody hits us? Is this an endemic a view of cyclists that's causing a real problem for us? What do you think?
Well, I can recall sitting at the DMV and seeing one woman go up who had no representation to try to argue her way out of multiple tickets. Because you go to the DMV and the police officer who wrote tickets, it's like a full shift's worth of tickets. So everyone in that room was all ticketed by that one police officer that day. And you see that the MO is the same. And this cyclist explained that the first of the three alleged T intersections or red lights she went through was one where there was actually barricades that was closing off traffic on the perpendicular street. And she argued to the judge there was no traffic on the closed off street, so it was okay for me to go through, which as a matter of law is sort of dicey. It's the red light is a red light regardless if traffic is blocked. But the response of the judge, which was just astounding to me, was, well, you're a cyclist. How do I know you didn't go through the four red lights preceding that one?
Ah, okay. Okay. And what do you do in that? What do you do when a judge tells you that?
It's outrageous. I mean, if I were her, I would have gotten a transcript of the hearing. There's an audio recording on an old school cassette tape.
Oh, so you can get a recording of your hearing.
You get a recording and you can appeal it. And I would say that this judge was biased and decided the ticket against the woman based on facts, not in evidence.
Okay.
Being cyclists always go through every red light was the fact that that court was apparently relying on.
Okay, so this is good to know. So if you go to a traffic hearing, you can get a recording of it. Okay, we're going to go to the phones. We have some calls. I just want to remind you the studio line is 212-209-2877. Hello, this is you're on Bike Snob. You're on WBAI. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, my name is Kurt. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kurt. How are you?
I would like to say this show is great. All bike riders in New York and across the country should be in listening to this show.
Thank you.
Is there any place where we can get a booklet on all the laws and all the bike laws as far as cycling? And also, the last time I was on my bike, I got hit by a driver who couple of blocks down from the accident took his plates off his car and kept going.
Okay, Steve, so first of all, what's the best resource to find the laws?
You know, people are looking for answers to the law, and I'm sympathetic, but unfortunately, the answers are all too often not cut and dried. They are complex. They involve looking at different sources of law, state law, city law, administrative codes, legislation, judge-made law. There are at least five different sources of law that can apply to a particular traffic interaction. I try to get out there and speak as much as I can with groups like Transportation Alternatives, bike clubs, wherever I can to answer people's questions. As far as a driver taking off the plates, that's a really important concern that you raise. First of all, I'm sorry that you were hit. Hopefully you weren't too seriously injured, but I feel like one of the biggest problems in requiring drivers to behave not only lawfully but in an appropriate, considerate way in traffic is this veil of anonymity that drivers have where they're inside the car, you can't see who they are. We have this whole scheme of camera-based enforcement in which the drivers personally never suffer consequences, even if they go through, you know, red lights and are caught by a camera, if they speed in a school zone, caught by a camera. The car, quote-unquote, is punished with a $50 summons. There's no recidivism provision. You can do it as many times as you want, and it's all because, oh, we don't know who did it. That's the story. The whole law enforcement and criminal justice system throws up its hands and says, we don't know who was in that car, so we can't punish anyone. We can't punish the owner, because how can you presume it was the owner? Well, I think owners should at least be aware of what their car is being used for.
Right.
And so you should go to them and be able to ask them, who was driving your car at such and such a time? And I can't tell you how many hit and run cases I have where it is such an uphill battle getting the police even to inquire of an owner when their car was used in an absolutely horrendous crash that caused severe injury or near death.
Okay, so a car basically, I always think of it as a car is like an embassy, and anything goes in the embassy. Like, you can do whatever you want, and that's it. Is this sort of accurate?
Right, especially if you have tinted windows and you can't even see. So hit and run cases, there'll be video of the car, but the car has tinted windows or polarized windshield, and you can't see who's in it, and the police say, the police refuse to go to speak to the owner of the car used in a hit and run crime like that because they say, well, where's it going to lead? No one's going to be able to actually prove who was in the car. So why should we even bother talking to the owner?
Right. And you as the owner, as the registrant of the vehicle, you have no responsibility.
Essentially, as a practical
nobody holds
matter,
you accountable. The law does not hold you accountable as a practical matter for being the owner of a car. Even if it's not you driving it, let's just say for the sake of argument, somebody did borrow or steal your car and hit a cyclist. So nobody, that's not your problem.
So I need to qualify it by saying that the cycling community and lawyers like myself have been pushing very hard on the police and district attorneys to do something about this. And we see in individual cases that sometimes there are consequences.
Yes.
Sometimes there's ways to prove what happened.
Yes.
By and large, there's no accountability.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kurt, very much. We're going to take another call. You're on BAI. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi. My name is Mitch, and I'm calling from Brooklyn. I want to know, do you think a bicyclist should require to have some type of insurance, liability insurance? Because I was getting out of my car, I'm 70 years old, and a bicyclist ran into me, and I fell down, and I had to go to the hospital because I fractured my wrist.
Okay, yes.
You know, I had to pay for all of that out of my pocket.
Okay, I'm sorry that happened to you. You know, this is something you hear sometimes from people that bicyclists should be licensed. Bicyclists should have insurance. They don't have these things that motorists have to have. So, Steve, what's your opinion of that, your feeling of that, and what recourse does this person have?
I have a quick three or four things I need to say to this caller, and I appreciate you raising these issues. I mean, the reason that cyclists are not required to have insurance or licenses to operate a bicycle is because the risks created by bicycling are so many orders of magnitude less than the risks created by motor vehicle operation. There's just no comparison. And so in the way that we have decided to create our laws and govern our transportation, you know, legislators and others have decided that bicyclists are just in a different risk category and we're not going to require this of cyclists. And by and large, I agree with that judgment. That doesn't mean that cyclists have no accountability or responsibility. There is, in fact, a separate statute that makes a crime hitting and running as a cyclist, mm-hmm. just like there's one for motorists. So I hope that that was not done to you, to the caller, that the cyclist hit and run against you. Secondly, I would say that, or thirdly, I would say that if you got out of your car and the cyclist struck you, it sounds like it's possible that you exited your car on the side of the car that was open to traffic, where
okay.
the bicycle
yes.
was proceeding, creating what some cyclists will view as a dooring scenario.
Right.
And, you know, there is, in fact, a restriction against opening your door into a space where cyclists are lawfully proceeding without looking first or in a manner that would interfere with them. And the final thing I'll say is that I believe your injuries would be considered motor vehicle related for purposes of the no-fault insurance of your vehicle, and that all your medical bills should have been paid for by your auto insurance, and that is the scheme that we have for allocating risk of injury associated with these traffic interactions, and you should have made a claim on your own insurer, and perhaps it's not too late to do so.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Thanks for that. I want to stick 1 second with the dooring here. So can you articulate for us, because it seems like the general public have no idea that you can't open your door into traffic, or you have to check first, and that if you do quote unquote door, which is when you open your door in a cyclist path and the cyclist hits your door, a lot of people don't seem to realize that this is the motorist's responsibility, that the motorist is at fault in a dooring scenario. So can you articulate the law as it pertains to opening your car door, to getting out of your car?
Sure, absolutely. And I'll just preface it by saying dooring is the most common crash scenario that we see from all the, unfortunately, hundreds of calls that we get from cyclists who've been injured in traffic. I mean, dooring is the number one, and I guess in a certain way, thankfully, because dooring injuries do tend to be less serious than some of the other types of injuries that we see when someone is struck by a car moving at speed. But dooring is absolutely illegal. You cannot open the door into a space that's available for bike traffic. And the reason that people don't understand that they can't open the door without looking is because they're not thinking about bikes as being part of the traffic, as having a right to be on the road, as traveling in that space adjacent to where parked vehicles are. They have a mentality that is just, you know, I'm parked, I'm not moving anymore, I can open up my doors. But really, what's the difference between throwing your door open into, you know, a crowded New York City street that's going to have motor vehicles and cyclists and others traveling on it, and just suddenly swerving to the left or right without signaling? What
Absolutely.
You're doing is changing the position of your vehicle, in essence,
yes.
and blocking off a part of the road that was available for traffic up until a split second ago. So how can that surprise anyone that it would result in injuries to people, especially vulnerable street users like cyclists?
Right, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another call. Hello, this is WBAI. You're on the air. What is your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Mike from Manhattan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm very good. Yeah, I have a two-part question. Number one, my understanding, if you're riding on a sidewalk, only the EPA can officially issue a ticket, because I know my brother-in-law beat a ticket on that basis, that only EPA can issue tickets for riding on the sidewalk, number one, if I'm correct.
Okay, Steve is shaking
his
head on that.
One other quick question. Is this, as I see it, a part of a much wider civil asset forfeiture scam that the government has been perpetrating for years in other ways as well, with the fake ticketing cars? I've gotten false tickets for my car.
Okay.
I got one once on a GWB, which was bogus.
So
I mean,
are you asking if ticketing of bikes, of cars, of everything, is this a government conspiracy to
shaking
to steal
down
it.
People, basically illegally taxing people,
Steve,
with
is
bogus
this a shakedown?
Excuses.
Is this a big shakedown? Are we being shaken down?
As I explained, a lot of ticketing activity is driven by directives coming from supervisors in the police department that you are going out today to write 20 tickets for the following violation on the following
right.
participants in traffic. So it happens on a policy basis, you know, whether
yeah.
that's driven by revenue or it's driven by a decision by the higher ups in the police department that we need to have ticketing focused on this activity. The thing to remember is that the police have what's called an observed violation rule. I call it that. No one else calls it that, and it's not written, which is some of the best kind of rules there are, right? Unwritten
An
rules.
An unwritten rule,
I'm going to
yeah.
tell you what it is right now,
okay.
which is that the police, generally speaking, do not believe that their tickets will hold up in traffic court unless they personally observe the violation.
Okay.
So, and of course, this is completely counterintuitive, because when it comes to crime, of
mm-hmm.
course, police will enforce the law.
Yes.
Against criminal violations, even when no one sees it. If no one sees a murder, does that mean there's no enforcement? No. It's only with respect to traffic violations
okay.
that this observed violation rule exists. So the cops are, in essence, waiting in the bushes or in an unmarked car with dark tinted windows to come and see what happens, so they can tell the whole story of what happened.
Right.
It seems so contrived, and it feels like it's an attempt to gouge people for money. But it's this rule that the police have, and part of why I think they like this rule is because it means when they show up at the scene of a traffic collision,
mm-hmm.
they don't, you know, people are going to say, that guy hit me, you know, why don't you ticket him, you know? No, we don't do that. We only write tickets when we've been assigned to go out and write these 20 tickets for this day.
Right.
And so there's never any ticket writing associated with the dangerous conduct that makes all of us feel concerned.
Right.
I do just have to say that riding on the sidewalk, unfortunately, is a misdemeanor. It is a crime based on a law passed by the New York City legislature decades ago, and that it is enforced by police. And you have to take a trip to summons court if you get one of those summonses. It is a criminal violation, not an EPA.
A criminal violation to ride on the sidewalk. So if I, as an adult, and as a child, you're allowed to ride on the sidewalk. What is it, under 14 or 15 or something like that, or smaller than 26-inch wheels or something? Is the
yeah.
Whatever the law is. So I, as an adult, if I'm accompanying my child on the sidewalk, that's a criminal misdemeanor.
So technically speaking, you have to be riding your bicycle on the sidewalk in a manner that endangers persons or property.
Oh.
There's two flavors of riding on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
One is a violation.
Yeah.
The other is a misdemeanor.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
the dangerous riding on the sidewalk is the misdemeanor. I have never once seen a summons issued for the non-dangerous type of
they
sidewalk cycling. The cops
yeah.
only know about the second one.
Okay.
And when it goes to court, they're never even able to articulate the supposed danger to persons or property, because they never knew it was a requirement to begin with.
Okay. And as far as the observed violation, I'll just ask quickly. The observed violation, basically, this is why, for example, if you're a cyclist and a motorist harasses you, which we've all experienced out there in the roads. We're on our bike, a road rager, you know, tries to sideswipe us, scream something at us, whatever the case may be. This is why when you call 911 or flag down a cop or do whatever, this is why they kind of universally throw their hands up. Is this correct?
Yeah, I hate to say universally because there are some cops out there who do the right thing, but okay. It's just too few.
Okay.
Too few.
Okay. All right. We're going to take another call. This is you're on BAI. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, how you doing? Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling from Harlem. This is Joe. I'm going to just respond to a previous caller's question about a place to find some of the laws. But I appreciate what the attorney said, because I certainly didn't know about all how convoluted it is and how many different, he said five sources of laws. But I'll just say this one thing. There is a little booklet. I think it's a green booklet, like a New York biker's law, city laws, or something like that. And okay. It does give you some information. Some is better than nothing.
Okay.
So, and then segueing into my question, So, this is about, I'm a motorist. I drive for a living as well.
Okay.
But at the same time, I do drive my bike as well. And this is going directly towards this other this other safer street, not us against them.
Right.
So, I'm saying as far as the lighting on the bike and, you know, or horn or something like, and a bit read some that they were supposed to have it. You want some enforcement, but I'm just like sort of like stuck in the middle. So I'm calling it like it should be something because it makes us safer. We can't see drivers on bicycles. We don't want to hit them, but they say want to get hit. But most of the time their safety is not in their mind.
You're saying you think there should be more concerted effort to get cyclists using lights and horns or bells and that
warnings,
sort of thing.
Yeah, even if it's a warning the first time and then a ticket or something that says, hey, bottom line, you guys got to have lights on these bikes.
Okay,
so in the day and the night.
All right,
and horns or something. You know?
Gotcha. Thank you for that. I think he makes a good point, which is that you know, there's the law, which seems to be enforced in a, I don't know, is arbitrary the right word, in arbitrary fashion. Yet at the same time, there are rules that do exist for good reason to keep us safer. For example, it's a good idea to have a light on your bike. You should be visible at night, you know, and you can get a ticket for not having that. There is a law to have a bell on your bike. Right. You have to be audible. So what in your opinion, having seen all of this stuff, what approach should what role does the law and the NYPD have in actually keeping us safer versus this sort of hide in the bushes, you know, fish in a barrel type of enforcement? What would be ideally the right way to approach these laws and enforce them?
Well, I don't think it's cops who should be enforcing these laws at all.
Okay.
I mean, when you think about the police department, they have two basic functions. One is fighting crime, and the other is public safety.
Okay.
And I think that traffic interactions, not all the time, but most of the time, fall in the category of public safety.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that people from maybe the Department of Transportation or the Department of Health might be better equipped to deal with the epidemic of traffic violence that we have on our streets and to keep people safe, to teach them behaviors that are safe behaviors when they're moving in traffic than police officers who, I have to say, the vast majority of them do not consider traffic law enforcement to be part of their job. It's not why they became cops.
Mm-hmm.
They have very little interest in it, and they find it extremely irritating to come to the scene of so many fender benders, which is the bulk of traffic law enforcement that cops do, and making reports of two drivers who are just fighting with each other.
Right.
And then that kind of disdain for that whole area of public safety, traffic law enforcement, mm-hmm. and emergency response spills over into crashes involving vulnerable street users who are usually much more seriously injured and raise some much more serious issues that I wish the responders would be dealing with, like that they're in shock, that they have poor judgment, that they're refusing medical attention because they believe that they can't afford a trip in an ambulance to an ER when in fact the driver's insurance has to pay for that medical treatment. So in my mind, what we need is a different agency to be dealing with this, because there are very, very few cops who want to do this.
Okay. So the NYPD enforcement of traffic rules and street safety are in effect, they're mutually exclusive. And there's sort of a total disconnect between the way we handle traffic enforcement and the ostensible goal, which is street safety, public safety. Okay. We're going to go back to the phones. WBAI, you're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Russell in White Plains.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to point out that you might be overlooking that the firemen and the police are in cahoots, and the police wouldn't give a fireman a ticket anyway. And I'd also like to point out that dooring is deadly. I knew a guy several years ago. He avoided getting doored and ended up under the back wheels of a truck. It's deadly. And I'd like to also point out that the location of alleged camera violations can be synced up with the telephones of the drivers so that they can be held responsible. Cars are in communication with each other. It's artificial intelligence. It's driverless cars. These people can be remotely ticketed by having their cars, which are tailgating, weaving in and out. I'm a motorist. I see what's going on. Drivers are worse than ever, and the police have an important job in forcing our safety. And in addition, one more thing, bicycles could have a GPS on them so that they could be, in a sense, licensed passively. And in case of an accident, you could see who's at fault. Could I get any feedback on that?
I was right with you up until the GPS on the bicycles. I don't know about that. You know, there are companies now, I think Volvo may be the company that was working on a connected helmet, which would the smart helmet would talk to the smart car, and they'd both cooperate so you wouldn't get hit. And to me, that opens up a whole other can of worms of requiring cyclists to wear helmets, and you're not wearing your connected futuristic space helmet.
To run you over.
So it's okay to run you over, exactly. To me, that's dangerous. But, you know, the traffic cameras is an interesting one. I think that we've seen that traffic cameras, speed cameras, are effective in reducing collisions and making the street safer. And I think we've also seen cases where the NYPD is resisting those. Steve, what do you think about automated traffic enforcement?
I think it's the way to go. It is completely consistent with what I was saying, which is get cops out of the traffic law enforcement business to the extent feasible and appropriate. There's still some work for them to do in that area, for sure. But if cameras can do it, it's obviously cheaper. It's much more efficient. There are many more summonses issued by cameras than there ever were by NYPD officers sent out on details to write tickets. And I think very importantly, the camera is not biased the way police officers are for or against particular participants in traffic. And the caller mentioned the police and the firefighters are in cahoots. I wouldn't exactly put it that way, but there's a custom of professional courtesy where police officers sometimes will give a pass to someone who's a fellow city employee or a fellow member of uniform service. By the same token, there are certainly incidences where police will focus their enforcement on people based on the color of their skin or their perceived ethnicity or other characteristics that they shouldn't be. So let's get all of that bias out of the policing. If cameras can do it in a neutral way, isn't that what we want?
All right. Thank you.
And I do just have to say to the caller, Doring's typically are less serious injuries, but I represent the father of a young man who was killed almost exactly 1 year ago in what I call a second strike dooring, where he was doored under the wheels of a truck that then ran over him. And it's absolutely horrific way to lose your child. There's a video of it. It's terrible. And, I think there's an important point here, which is that the negligent act of the motorist, it's really fortuitous, the degree of harm that comes to pass. Someone can do something absolutely crazy and maybe no harm results. maybe someone does something that's marginally negligent and it can, or what people consider marginally negligent, and it could kill someone. What people don't realize is that driving and using cars in public is the most dangerous thing that any of us ever do. And people ignore those risks. And so it's the conduct and not the amount of harm that should trigger the consequences. And unfortunately, our system has far more consequences if you kill someone. And that's really fortuitous, whether that's the actual consequence of the wrongful act. You need to look at what the activity is. You need to educate people and do enforcement and have engineering fixes that minimize the risk.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to take more calls.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders of The Laura Flanders Show. The Left Forum is right around the corner, and they have generously donated weekend passes to WBAI listener supporters who make a $50 pledge in support of WBAI. I've had the pleasure of hosting many panels and plenaries at the Left Forum over the years, and I'm doing it again this time. I'll be hosting the Saturday plenary on the 50th anniversary of Stonewall and a session with Chris Hedges and Rick Wolf on Lennon. So come meet me, Laura Flanders, and the others at the 2019 Left Forum and be part of a conversation about radically imagining and building a different future. Make a pledge of $50 today and lock in your free weekend pass to the Left Forum, taking place in Brooklyn June 28th through June 30th. That's the 28th through the 30th in Brooklyn. Go to give, then the numeral 2, WBAI.org. That's give to WBAI.org and search Left Forum. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. See you at the Left Forum.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hi, you're listening to WBAI. This is Bike Snob. My name is Eben Weiss. We're here in the studio with Steve Vaccaro of Vaccaro and White. Steve is a bicycle lawyer and activist, and we're talking about bikes, the law, and we're taking calls. WBAI, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, this is Mario Country Club.
Hi, Mario.
Bronx.
Hi.
I think, I don't know if there's a law, but I think that all bikers should be have to carry ID.
Okay.
And if they don't, then the police should take care of it, where the, you know, whatever way they need to get the ID of that person. Now, here's my question. Currently, I don't know if you covered this. If there are no bike lanes on a street or avenue, is the biker still allowed to go that way? And can they get ticketed if they're on a street with no bike lane?
Okay, so we've got two issues here that come up fairly frequently. Number one is the issue of cycling and ID. So let's address that one first. Steve, you're on a bike. What is your responsibility as far as carrying ID? If you don't have it, what happens?
Okay, just like anyone else moving around New York City, you don't have to carry your papers with you to be out in public. However, if you commit a traffic violation or other crime and you are stopped or detained by a police officer and they intend to issue you some sort of a process, a summons or arrest you, if you don't have ID, they are allowed to give you the full measure arrest, which is actually bringing you down to be booked at central processing, because, you know, police have to have some way of being able to issue a summons to you. And that means you need to have some form of satisfactory ID. Some cyclists say, oh, I don't like to carry my driver's license. I keep it at home and then I can't get a ticket from the police. That's certainly not true. The DMV has a little number that has your name associated with it in their database, whether or not you have a driver's license.
Right.
And you will get that ticket and it will follow you. And if you ever want to get a driver's license later on in life, they will be able to look up your whole history of all your bike summonses that you may not have responded to and defaulted on. So you can't avoid that sort of trouble by not providing ID, and the law is now that you must.
And if you don't have a driver's license, you have a state ID, what would you proffer?
Anything. I mean, any kind of ID that's acceptable. And if all you have is a credit card, police officers typically don't want to do the full measure arrest anyway. Okay. So they'll take the credit card. They'll have some discussion on the radio with someone back at the station who can maybe figure out who you are.
All right. And as far as the second part of the question seemed to be, are people on bikes allowed to ride on streets that don't have bike lanes, which would make cycling in New York City virtually impossible, correct?
Right. So the default rule is that cyclists have the same rights and responsibilities as motorists, with a whole panoply of different types of exceptions. But that basic default rule means that you don't need a bike lane in order to be riding on the street. If there's no bike lane on the street, the cyclist has to follow the rules about where they're supposed to be on the street. If the street is wider than 40 feet in one way, you keep to the left or right. If it is less than 40 feet wide, your typical side street in Manhattan or other boroughs, there's really no regulation here in New York City about where on the street you must be, although I would argue or suggest that people should keep to the left or the right to minimize conflicts with the motor vehicle traffic behind them, if it's safe and appropriate to do so. And there may be circumstances where cyclists have to take the lane. So on roads with no bike lanes or bike infrastructure or bike route signs, when it is safe and appropriate or safety requires it, cyclists can be riding right up the middle of that road, and the motorists have to stay behind that cyclist just like they would behind a motorist who might be looking for a parking space and moving at the same speed, or looking at their phone and moving at the same speed and not feeling like somehow the cyclist doesn't belong there and is slowing them down.
Right. And now, when there is a bike lane, what is your responsibility for using it? Because you're often hearing about the NYPD ticketing cyclists for not being in the bike lane on the street where there is a bike lane.
If a bike lane is available and it is safe for use, it's available for use, the cyclist should be in it, and the cyclist can be ticketed for being outside of it. There are exceptions to that as well. Obviously, if it's unsafe or not available and blocked off, the cyclist doesn't have to use it. In addition, if you're exiting the street from the side opposite the bike lane, it's a left-hand bike lane and you need to make a right turn, you're allowed to go over and shift right a reasonable amount of distance prior to the turn. How much is reasonable? It's not exactly clear.
Okay. We're going to take another call. Thank you very much for your call. WBAI, you're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Asar. I'm from the village of Harlem.
Hi.
And there's three questions that I would like to ask Steve.
Okay.
Number one is, on these bike lanes, is it only one way you could ride on the bike lane? And the second question is the definitive answer as to age concerning the helmet. And the third question, which is final, and then I'm going to hang up, is that, is it possible that you have to have in your possession ownership of the bicycle, in other words, of purchasing.
A way of proving
that.
Thank
you for taking my...
Okay, so we had three questions. We have number one, can you ride in either direction on a bike lane? Number two, the age requirements for helmets. And number three, do you have to have proof of ownership of your bicycle when you're riding it?
So bike lanes have traffic devices embedded in them. They are the painted decals in the path of the bike lane, and they will indicate to you what is the lawful direction of travel. Typically, they are only one direction, the same direction as traffic. Sometimes they're bidirectional, such as you see along Prospect Park West or in other parts of the city. You just have to look and see what the rules are for cyclists, not look just at the one-way signs for motorists, and it should be reasonably clear. Secondly, with respect to the definitive age on helmets, you know, I'm not sitting here with my law books. I believe that 14 years of age and older, you do not, you are not required to wear a helmet. But I could be wrong about that. I could be off by a year. It is something that can be checked, and I always urge people to give us a call at the office. We give out free legal advice every day. 212-577-3040 is our office number, and people are always consulting with us about the law because it's never exactly clear. I have never before heard an inquiry about ownership of a bicycle and whether or not you can prove it, and I would be troubled to find that NYPD has come up with a new kind of policing where they're trying to check to see if the bicycles people are riding actually belong to them.
Okay. I'm glad that hasn't been happening. So the last question I'm going to ask you, Steve, and this is something that I would imagine would be of concern to anybody who rides a bike. If you are hit by a driver, okay, now this is the most stressful thing you can experience on a bike. And when you're involved in a collision, you're probably as the least capable you'll ever be of making any rational decision or proceeding methodically. And yet there's so many details. There's a procedure involved and you have to know what's going on. It's very difficult. What should you do? What do you have to know?
Okay. I'll preface my response by saying, first of all, listen carefully to what I'm about to say. And when you are the cyclist who comes upon the cyclist who is hit,
yes,
you're clear and possessed of mind. You can help that cyclist because you haven't lost, lost your rationality and your judgment in the ways that you describe, which is certainly true. You need to stay at the scene and to gather for yourself the basic information that you're going to need in order to exercise your rights if in case you need to. What you need to understand is that you are in no position to gauge the severity of your injuries. Mm-hmm. They might be extremely serious and you're just not aware of it. Do not assume that your injuries are minimal because you're not feeling acute pain. Number two, do not assume that if the police arrive at the scene that they are going to collect the names of witnesses or even the license plate of the vehicle that struck you. You have to do that on your own. And best of all is if a friendly cyclist or pedestrian or other person, even a motorist, stops and assists you with that and gathers that information. Third of all, you've got to stay at the scene because if there is the need to pursue a claim for medical treatment on a no-fault basis or for compensation, if you want to show that the driver was at fault, you have to prove that the collision occurred. And this is this terrible paradox we have as cyclists with the police because in many ways we are preyed upon by the police no less than other people who call up and say, oh, this ticketing is just about revenue generation and I feel like the city is trying to squeeze blood out of me. It certainly happens with cyclists. But, we need police to come and help us at the scene of a collision as much as they prey upon us in that other context, because without the police coming and showing up and issuing the so-called police accident report, the insurance company will say, show me the report or it didn't happen.
Right.
This happens so many times. And if you are struck by a hit-and-run driver,
yes,
you must notify the police within 24 hours in order to qualify for free medical coverage, mm-hmm, and compensation from a fund that is there and set aside for the victims of uninsured motorists or hit-and-run motorists. And people don't realize this. They don't call the police and make their report because you have to stay at the scene. The police will not take your report at the precinct. You can be hit in front of the precinct. If you walk out of the roadway, up the steps, and into the precinct and speak to the desk sergeant, no, we're not giving you a report. You left the scene of the collision.
Okay.
You've got to stay there until the police come, whether it's minutes or hours.
Okay. All right. So we have one more call. This is WBAI. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello. This is Jimmy, calling from Orange County. I'm a 30-year member of NYPD.
Okay.
Working in Manhattan,
okay,
most of that. And I can tell you, a Chinese food delivery man is the only guy who will ride a bike on a major Deegan at night with no helmet, no light to deliver $10 worth of Chinese food.
Wow, this is quite a stereotype.
It's not a stereotype if it's the truth. Most of the problems.
I live in the Bronx. I've never seen a Chinese delivery man helmetless on the Deegan. But I'll defer. Okay. So what's your point?
Excuse me, but you're in no position to question my expertise.
You're absolutely right. You're in Orange County. I'm in the Bronx. But So tell me.
I live in Orange County. Okay, I work in Manhattan for about 30 years. I can tell you
where
that
there's no major Deegan. So please, what's your point?
Oh, listen, I work in the highway unit.
Okay.
And we respond everywhere.
Okay. So with regard to
the major Deegan. So let's get past that.
Please. Please.
I can tell you this. A lot of the problem with the cyclists, and I know you don't want to say it, but it's people from third world cultures where they do not have traffic lights. They don't have sidewalks.
Okay.
They don't even know how to cross the street. They need to be educated when they come here.
Uh-huh. Are there people from these countries driving cars as well?
I'm gonna stick with the bicyclists, which is the topic.
Okay.
When they come here, they need to acclimate to the culture. They need to be taught what red means, what a green light means, what a yellow light means.
Yes.
And all these types of safety things which do not exist in their countries.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Some very eye-opening perspective from an NYPD highway patrol officer who says that the problem here is that people from third world countries do not understand traffic laws or anything. So this was very eye-opening perspective from the NYPD, and a great final call, I think, that really, really sums everything up. So my guest today on the show is Steve Vaccaro of Vaccaro & White, bicycle lawyer and activist. I want to thank you very much for being on the show. This was the Bike Snob program with Eben Weiss. Thank you very much for calling. Ride safe out there. Have a great day.
Thanks, Eben. I can't believe I don't get to respond.
Oh, you can respond.
Oh, okay.
Let's have a response.
I think that it's often the case when I'm riding around in New York that tourists from the Midwest and other parts of the country, at least to all appearances, seem to have no clue about walk signals or don't walk signals or anything else, any of the traffic rules. In New York, it's a dense environment. It's very complex and people don't understand. I agree. There's a need for education. I think it's true just about everybody, including those outside of New York within the United States. So let's get to doing the hard work. And I don't think that it should all be on the NYPD shoulders. In fact, I think we should be taking it away from them and giving it to people who really care about doing that education.
All right. Thank you.
Mavis Staples.
Anita Franco.
Railroad Earth.
The Whalers.
The Mammals.
Tom Chapin.
Tom Paxton.
And Margot Thunderbird.
Are just a few of the many performers at the Clearwater Festival on June 15th and 16th.
At Croton Point Park on the Hudson River.
You can get a full weekend pass and support WBAI at the same time with a $95 donation. That's the early bird price that's not available anywhere else but here on WBAI.
Call 516-620-3602 or go to www.givetowbai.org and put Clearwater in the search box.
See you at the festival.
There's a natural mystic blowing through the air.
The WBAI Local Station Board has its next meeting on Wednesday, June 12th at 7 p.m. It is open to the public. The location is First Unitarian Church, Undercroft Room, entrance at 50 Monroe Place, Brooklyn, New York, 11201, right around the corner from Pierpont Street. Travel by train 2345RN to Court Street Borough Hall and ACF to J Street. Travel by bus B25, 26, 38, 41, 45, 52, and 103. That's the WBAI Local Station Board meeting Wednesday, June 12th at 7 p.m.
This is Molly Bloom. Join me on Sunday, June 16th for Radio Bloomsday and listen to my private nighttime thoughts as I lie in bed reminiscing about my lovers, my children, my husband, my days in Gibraltar, preparing for my first public concert in a year and not at all satisfied with my career. This is Carrot O'Brien. Please join me, Molly Bloom, and Janet Coleman for a special Radio Bloomsday Father's Day celebration featuring Anne Enright, Jerry Stiller, John Lithgow, Wallace Shawn, Alec Baldwin, performing episodes of James Joyce's Ulysses. Say yes.